beta. When one is captured by this despondency, thoughts, tears, loss of bodily luster, humility, and heavy breathing result. Vishada is also explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When one fails to achieve his desired goal of life and repents for all his offenses, there is a state of regret called Vishada. The symptoms of avasada are also explained. One hankers to revive his original condition and inquires how to do so. There's also deep thought, heavy breathing, crying, and lamentation, as well as a changing of the bodily color and a drying up of the tongue. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 33 such destructive symptoms are mentioned. They are expressed in words, in the eyebrows, and in the eyes. These symptoms are called vyabhichari bhava, destructive ecstasy. If they continue, sometimes they are called sanchari, or continued ecstasy. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri gurave namah. Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim jat kripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinataranam. Nama om vishnu padaya krishna preshtaya bhutale shrimate bhaktivedanta swaminiti namane namaste saraswati deve gauravani kucharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatide shakarine. Pancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. The nectar from the lips of Lord Krishna and his transcendental qualities and characteristics surpass the taste of the essence of all nectar, and there's no fault in tasting such nectar. If one does not taste it, he should die immediately after birth, and his tongue is to be considered no better than the tongue of a frog. One's nostrils are no better than the bellows of a blacksmith if one has not smelled the fragrance of Krishna's body, which is like the aroma of musk combined with that of the bluish lotus flower. Indeed, such combinations are actually defeated by the aroma of Krishna's body. The palms of Krishna's hands and the soles of his feet are so cool and pleasant that they can be compared only to the light of millions of moons. One who has touched such hands and feet has indeed tasted the effects of touchstone. If one has not touched them, his life is spoiled and his body is like iron. Lamenting in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu opened the doors of grief within his heart. Morose, humble, and disappointed, he recited a verse again and again with a despondent heart. So, how's that chant and be happy thing working out for you? What is that, a bait and switch or something? We could say, we could just as honestly say, chant and learn to cry, as Srila Prabhupada points out in Nectar of Devotion. These tears, this learning the art of crying for Krishna, that's the price you pay to enter Goloka Vrindavan. So here we see Lord Chaitanya deep in lamentation, despondency. He's morose, humble, disappointed, despondent. He is beyond bummed. And what this chapter, the second chapter, is a kind of a peek ahead. As Srila Prabhupada tells us in the introduction to the chapter, it's kind of it's a trailer, right? It's a preview of coming attractions. It's a look into, a peek into Antya Lila, when Lord Chaitanya was teaching by his example what our lives, how our lives should actually, the peak to which our lives should actually build, a peak of absolute dedication to loving Krishna. And we may not, even at the ultimate perfection, find ourselves lamenting like this. After all, this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is Krishna accepting the mood of Srimati Radhika in order to taste something even better than being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and even better beyond being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even better than being Krishna, Rasaraj Krishna, someone who's expert at tasting all kinds of loving exchanges. Because he sees Krishna, as we see in the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna sees something's missing in him. And he's got to have it. So he comes for a couple of reasons. One, to taste that, and the other is to teach the path of Raganuga Bhakti, as Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj says. Krishna determines that he's going to come so that he can teach the path of Raganuga Bhakti, teach these Chari Bhava, these four bhavas, to the unfortunate living entities stuck in the sump hole of Kali Yuga, and to taste the nectar of loving him, because that's something he can't do himself. So here he is, immersed, Krishna immersed in the mood of Radharani at the very peak of her love for him. There's a whole science, quite a progression of how love for Krishna develops. You start with Shraddha, associate with devotees, engage in the processes of devotional service, give up all sorts of unnecessary things, like in the Vritti Sad, become firmly fixed in the practice of devotion, develop a taste for it, become attached, and ultimately become immersed in ecstasy. And at the far end is prema. But when you get to prema, you're still not finished there, because there are different flavors of prema, different stages of prema: sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava. And this is an exhibition of Mahabhava. This is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishnadas Kaviraj says, opening the gates of his heart and letting it all out. Because as far as he knows, he's all by himself. He's just completely immersed in his thing. As we'll see, he's going to wake up, and, or he's going to not wake up exactly, but become a little aware of the external world, and he's going to see a couple of other people there, Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar. And these things are things that generally aren't discussed in indiscriminate company. I remember hearing a talk, maybe it was in L.A. a long, long time ago. Maybe it was late 60s or very, or maybe it's probably late 60s even. And someone, I don't remember exactly what Srila Prabhupada had been talking about when he asked for questions, and there was a time when he did ask for questions. After a while, he didn't so much. But he asked for questions, and someone asked, "Can you tell us more about the rasa dance?" And Prabhupada said, yeah, he was taken a little aback, I think. He said, "What?" He said, "We were wondering if you could tell us a little more about the rasa dance." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not discuss these things even in this company. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vas. This is not something that you just talk about casually." He said, Mahaprabhu only discussed this with a few people: Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, Shiki Mahiti, and his sister Madhavi Devi. Other than that, he didn't open the gates of his heart and share that with everybody. So he's spent the last so many years of his life pretty much locked in the Gambhira, because he couldn't be trusted to take care of himself. So now, in the purport, after Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is describing these moods of Lord Chaitanya. I mean, Lord Chaitanya is immersed in these, and he's chanting. He chants verses from Ramananda's Jagannath Vallabha Natika, and then he kind of I was thinking riffs on him, but riff isn't really the right word. Riffs are phrases, but he's kind of, if you were thinking music, he's probably improvising on these. He's letting the verses kind of grow the expression of his own feelings, and these verses are all kind of expansions of the last verse of the Shikshastakam. That, you know, this is the in mundane terms, I guess it would be the song of the abused spouse or something like that. I'm so faithful. He's just a cad. He's always running around. He treats me badly. He comes and uses me whenever he likes. But I can't help myself. I love him. So, but this is that. That's kind of, you know, if you have as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you've got the positive life, and then you've got the negative life, the spiritual life and the material life, and that's kind of at the bottom. These are the most pitiable among people, women who can't bring themselves to leave their cab of a boyfriend or their abusive spouse. So Krishna, we've heard recently how, you know, this is Radharani being abused by love, and she's, you know, quite plain about it. At the same time, she's waxing poetic about, I mean, what can you do? You know, if you haven't smelled the fragrance of his body, which is like, which surpasses the fragrance of musk combined with that of the blue lotus, then, you know, your nostrils are just like those of a frog. Frogs don't smell so much. Reptiles, you know, like snakes, the one thing we learned when we were in California at Bhaktivedanta Village, the herpetologist guy would come with all the rattlesnakes, and he would, you know, the snakes don't smell so much with their nostrils. They kind of pick up heat more. And that's kind of how they find their prey. So this is the ultimate rasa. Prema in Mahabhava. And Srila Prabhupada alludes to a somewhat scientific understanding of rasa and how it works in his purport. And so what he's describing here, what Krishnadas Kaviraj is describing here, are some Vyabhichari bhavas. So when we look at Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, what we see is that what rasa is the result of the interaction of five different kinds of bhavas. And because I always get fouled up with lists, I have to use my cheat sheet here. We've got there are anubhavas, sattvika bhavas, vyabhichari bhavas, stayi bhava. So when these different things interact, vibhava. So vibhava are the things that stimulate our eternal affection for Krishna. The stayi bhava is kind of the seed of everything else. It's the seed of rasa. And that's who we are. That's the nature of our eternal relationship with Krishna. And it's called stayi bhava because it doesn't change. That's who we are. The enjoyment. Rasa, we talk, you know, people talk about, hey, what's your rasa, Prabhu? It's actually not exactly the correct way to understand the word rasa. Rasa is what happens when all these things combine to make the ocean of love overflow its bounds. When all these things combine to create a hurricane that engulfs the New Orleans of your heart. And so the vibhavas are the things that happen that stimulate. And we'll take a look at, well, I'm not going to take a look at that. There are examples of this discussed in Nectar of Devotion. The anubhava are the things that happen from that after that heightened affection. They follow it, anu. The sattvika bhavas, and these are often going to be things, the anubhavas are often things that you may decide, you may have some control over. The sattvika bhavas are things that happen to your body involuntarily as a result of all this. The vyabhichari bhavas are transitory emotions that also enrich these things. And as Srila Prabhupada mentions, they're 33 in number. And I thought I'd just go through all 33 of them, and I'm not going to presume to discuss this stuff any further than I have, because it's out beyond my pay grade. But I thought maybe we could... Oh, yeah, okay, it's not 9:30 yet. We could read from Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada's discussions, his summary of Srila Rupa Goswami's discussion of these three particular vyabhichari bhavas. So the 33 vyabhichari bhavas are nirveda, self-disparagement, disappointment, or indifference; vishada, despair, frustration, or lamentation; dainya, humility; glani, depression or guilt; shrama, weariness or fatigue; mada, intoxication; garva, pride; shanka, alarm, doubt, or apprehension; trasa, fear or apprehension; avega, agitation or intense emotion; unmada, madness; apasmara, forgetfulness; vyadhi, sickness or disease; moha, bewilderment, confusion, illusion; mriti, death, one of your vyabhichari bhavas. It's transitory, right? Comes and goes. Alasya, laziness, kind of a sthayi bhava in my case. Jadata, inertness. Just like jada, bara, dumb. Inertness means you're dumbstruck. You've been struck dumb. You just can't. All of a sudden, you're stunned. You can't do anything. Vrida, shame or bashfulness. Avahita, I'm sorry. Yeah, avahita, concealment or hiding one's feelings. Smriti, remembrance. Bitarka, doubt or argumentativeness. Chinta, anxiety. Mati, thoughtfulness. Dhriti, forbearance or endurance. Harsha, jubilation, happiness, joy. Autsukyam, eagerness. Augriya, ferocity or violence. Amarsha, haughtiness, indignation. Asuya, envy, jealousy, malice. Opposite of anasuya, right? Chapala, restlessness, impudence, unsteadiness. Nidra, drowsiness. Supti, sleep. And bodha, wakefulness, alertness, or restlessness. In other words, kind of like insomnia. You can't settle down. So, when we combine the different vibhavas, the different anubhavas, the different sattvika bhavas, vyabhichari bhavas, with the sthayi bhava, all these things create a complex of emotions that causes the ocean of love, as I said, to overswell its bounds, to run, it's like a lake or river. The river overflows when there's a flood, and it can be extremely dramatic. And that's what's happening here. What's happening is that you're caught up in the drama of Krishna's life. Generally, we find ourselves caught up in the drama of our own lives, or the melodrama of our own lives. And it's so important that we're always talking about it. You hear people talking about it in line at the bank. You hear people talking about it at the gas station. You hear people talking about it wherever you go. I walk into a classroom and people are talking about the drama of their lives. Or they try to distract themselves from the drama of their lives by immersing themselves in the drama of somebody else's lives, like the people in the movies or the TV. Now all the girls and young women are just caught up in this whole the vampire movie thing. Is it? The Twilight movies, there's this series of novels, and they've got the movies coming out. Of course, if the novels are successful, of course you have to cash in and make a movie about it and just, you know, reach into people's pockets and suck more out. Plus, there's a whole bunch of other merchandise. We were in Toys R Us yesterday looking for something for our grandson. And I'm looking for the perfect stuffed cowie for him, and I can't find it. But we walk in there, and the first thing we see is like a whole thing of Twilight stuff. So it's just become a whole merchandising phenomenon. I don't know which fast food place has picked up on it. Might not be very good for business now that I think about it. Kind of a conflicting tastes thing going on there. Anyway, so they get caught up in those things, and you know you hear people, is it the werewolf or the should you go for the werewolf or the vampire, hot or cold or whatever, and so they get caught up in those dramas, but the ultimate goal of life is to get caught up in Krishna's drama. To find that page in Krishna's drama where your story is, and to enter it. So, when all these things combine, then what we have is called rasa. And the sthayi bhava is sometimes, which we kind of colloquially refer to as rasa, or rasa, which is what we hear too often. Like we, instead of rasabhasa, we hear rasabhasa. This is more properly called rati. So when all these things combine together to kind of get your life out of control, then that's what's called rasa. So I'll just read what Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion. Take a page out of Sunanda Prabhu's playbook and read from Nectar of Devotion about these first three Vyabhichari Bhavas, disappointment, Nirveda. When one is forced to act in a way which is forbidden or to refrain from acting in a way which is proper, he becomes regretful and thinks himself dishonored. At that time, there's a sense of disappointment. In this kind of disappointment, one becomes full of anxiety, sheds tears, changes bodily color, feels humility, and breathes heavily. When Krishna, in punishing, then there's some examples. Rupa Goswami explains these things, and then he develops them further by supporting them using examples from the Shastras, some of which Shastras he wrote. When Krishna, in punishing the Kaliya serpent, appeared to have drowned himself in the poisonous water of the Jamuna, Nanda Maharaj addressed Yashoda Devi thus, "My dear wife, Krishna's gone deep into the water, and so there's no longer any need to maintain our bodies, which are so full of sinful activities. Let us also enter into the poisonous water of the Jamuna and compensate for the sinful activities of our lives. This is an instance of severe shock wherein the devotee becomes greatly disappointed. When Krishna left Vrindavan, Subal, his intimate friend, decided to leave also. While leaving, Subal was contemplating that without Krishna there was no longer any pleasure to be had in Vrindavan. The analogy is given that as the bees go away from a flower that has no honey, Subal left Vrindavan when he found that there was no longer any relishable transcendental pleasure there. In Dhanakeli Kaumudi, Srimati Radharani addresses one of her friends in this manner, "My dear friend, if I cannot hear of the glorious activities of Krishna, it is better for me to become deaf. And because I'm now unable to see him, it would be good for me to become a blind woman. This is another instance of disappointment due to separation from Krishna." There's a statement in the Harivamsa wherein Satyabhama, one of the queens of Krishna in Dwarka, tells her husband, "My dear Krishna, since I heard Narada glorifying Rukmini before you, I can understand that there's no need of talking about myself." This is an instance of disappointment caused by envy. Rukmini and Satyabhama were co-wives, and because Krishna was husband of both, there was naturally some feminine envy between them. So when Satyabhama heard the glories of Rukmini, she was envious of her and thus became disappointed. In the 10th canto, 51st chapter, verse 47 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this statement, "My dear Krishna, I cannot say that it is only other people who are implicated in material existence, because I too am tangled with the bodily concept of life. I am always too much anxious about my family, home, wife, wealth, land, and kingdom. And because I have become so maddened by this material atmosphere, I'm thinking that now my life has been simply spoiled. Spoiled is kind of, Srila Prabhupada has a sort of idiosyncratic usage of the word spoiled, and it may have a background in an older way English is, it was used. When Prabhupada talks about spoiling your life, he's talking about, what he means is wasting your life. And if you waste something, it becomes spoiled. If you buy some mangoes but you don't offer them in a timely fashion, they become spoiled or wasted. This statement is an instance of disappointment caused by lamentation. According to Bharat Muni, this disappointment is inauspicious, but there are other learned scholars who have accepted such disappointment as being in the mood of neutrality and as being a preservative of ecstatic love. A lamentation, vishada. When one is unsuccessful in achieving his desired goal of life, when one finds no fulfillment in his present occupation, when one finds himself in reversed conditions, and when one feels guilt, at such a time one is said to be in a state of lamentation. In this condition of lamentation, one becomes questioning, thoughtful, tearful, regretful, and heavy-breathed. His bodily color changes, and his mouth becomes dry. One aged devotee of Krishna addressed him in this way, "My dear Krishna, O killer of the demon Agha, my body is now invalid due to old age. I cannot speak very fluently, my voice is faltering, my mind is not strong, and I'm often attacked by forgetfulness. But, my dear Lord, you are just like the moonlight, and my only real regret is that for want of any taste for your pleasant shining, I did not advance myself in Krishna consciousness." This statement is an instance of lamentation due to one's being unable to achieve his desired goal. One devotee said, "This night I was dreaming of collecting various flowers from the garden, and I was thinking of making a garland to offer to Krishna. But I'm so unfortunate that all of a sudden my dream was over and I could not achieve my desired goal." This statement is an instance of lamentation resulting from the non-fulfillment of one's duties. When Nanda Maharaj saw his foster son Krishna embarrassed in the sacrificial arena of Kamsa, he said, "How unfortunate I am that I did not keep my son bolted within a room. Unfortunately, I brought him to Mathura, and now I see that he's embarrassed by this giant elephant named Kuvalaya. It is as though the moon of Krishna were eclipsed by the shadow of the earth." This is an instance of lamentation caused by reversed conditions. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 9 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a statement by Brahma. "My dear Lord, just see my impudence. You are the unlimited original personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, and you rule over the most perfect illusory energies. And just see my impudence. I wanted to supersede you by my own personal power, and I was very puffed up with this tiny power of mine. Just as a simple spark from a fire cannot do any harm to the fire, so my bewildering potency was completely unsuccessful in thwarting your superior illusory power. Therefore, I find myself to be most insignificant and think of myself as a most useless person." This statement by Brahma is an instance of lamentation caused by committing an offense. Humility, dainya. A sense of weakness caused by distress, fear, or offensiveness is called humility. In such a humble condition, one becomes talkative, small in heart, dirty in mind, full of anxiety, and inactive. And that's the state of mind for which we should aspire. In the 10th canto, 51st chapter, verse 57 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the following statement by King Muchukunda. "My dear Lord, because of my bad deeds in the past, I'm everlastingly aggrieved. I'm always suffering from my desires, but still, my senses are never satisfied with material enjoyments. Somehow or other, by your grace, I'm now in a peaceful condition because I have taken shelter of your lotus feet, which are always free from all lamentation, fear, and death. O Supreme Protector, O Supreme Soul, O Supreme Controller, kindly give me your protection. I am so much embarrassed." This is a statement by Muchukunda. This statement by Muchukunda is an instance of humility resulting from a severely miserable condition of material existence. When Uttara was attacked by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, she became afraid of losing her child Maharaj Parikit, who was still within the womb. She immediately surrendered to Krishna and said, "My dear Lord, kindly save my child. I do not mind if I myself must be killed by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama." This is an instance of humility caused by fear. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, so this is the verse right after the verse we just read in the previous Vyabhichari Bhava, Lord Rama says, "O infallible one, I am born in the mode of passion, and therefore I have been falsely proud of being the creator of this material world. My false pride was just like dense darkness, and in this darkness I had become blind. In my blindness, I was considering myself a competitor to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But my dear Lord, even though I am accepted as the creator of this universe, I am eternally your servant. Therefore, kindly always be compassionate toward me and excuse me in that way." This statement by Brahma is another instance of humility resulting from committing an offense. Sometimes there's humility due to shyness. For example, when Krishna stole all the garments of the gopis while they were bathing in the river, all of them begged Krishna not to commit this injustice on them. The gopis addressed him thus, "Dear Krishna, we know that you're the son of Nanda Maharaj and that you're the most beloved of all Vrindavan. And you are very much loved by us also, but why are you giving us this trouble? Kindly return our garments. Just see how we're trembling from the severe cold." This humility was due to their shyness from being naked before Krishna. So, anyway, we have all these things that work together, and this actually should be our aspiration. We should be able to track over the years of our lives, the years of our practice in Krishna consciousness, some progress, at least some progress toward an aspiration for understanding and ultimately experiencing such emotions, not necessarily these emotions in particular, because Lord Chaitanya said he came to teach the four ratis, the four sthayi bhavas of Vrindavan, dasya ras, sakya ras, vatsalya ras, and madhurya. So this should be our aspiration, either something that we're actually looking for or looking for developing that aspiration. But this is what our lives ultimately should be about. Our lives should be, as you know, as we see, as we read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, formed around the six characteristics of surrender. The first two of which are anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya bharjanam. So they have these two things together have a particular characteristic, a nature, and that is it's a determination that whatever contributes to the growth of my aspirations for devotional service, I will embrace it. And whatever impedes that, I'll run away from it. And we had this determined, at least those of us who are old, getting a little long in the tooth, a little thick around the middle, except for some of us. We actually had some degree of this determination because we had to actually turn our backs on everything else and move into the temple to become devotees back then. Nowadays, not so much. But back then, the only way, practically, you know, in most temples, at least when I first joined, the only way that you really got the training and became eligible for initiation and all the things that we wanted was to move into the temple, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning from Mangalarti, go out for hours a day chanting on the streets or stumping door to door trying to sell back to Godheads or something, and chanting 16 rounds and coming back in the evening for more hearing and chanting. I remember when Nectar of Devotion came out in the summer of 1970, we had our morning and evening program, but when we got Nectar of Devotion, Gaur Sundar held a third class just after lunch before we went back out on Sankirtan. We would have a class in Nectar of Devotion. That's how big a deal it was. Does anyone have any comments? I'm not asking for questions. When this book came out, Srila Prabhupada told us, if you have any questions, read it again. And if you still have any questions, read it yet again. So if anyone has any comments, I'd be happy to entertain those. Muni. I didn't hear the... I haven't researched that. Spoiling your life? I had never heard that. And my parents are no younger than... My parents are older than yours, and they're probably no longer younger than Frank. Huh? Yeah, they say the Jews and the Jadus, there's a connection. I don't know. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, I had never heard the word spoiled be used in this. I'm sorry, you asked a question, I can't hear you. While I'm speaking, I can't hear. I have a hearing problem, and you don't have a mic, and you're way as far away as you can get from me, which is natural. So when I'm speaking and you're asking a question or making a comment, I can't hear it. So go ahead. Because it's here. I didn't say it was weird. It's unusual in my experience. I never encountered it until I was 22 years old. I'd never heard it. And I was a reader. So... I'm just saying it was unusual in my experience. And now people who grew up with this won't find it weird at all, but I just thought I would mention that. And if it offends you, I apologize. I'm an English professor for a reason. I'm interested in language. It's a trip to me, just like colors and form are a trip to you. And so I notice these things. And if my mentioning them bothers people, tough. Make a complaint to the board and have me pulled again. I'll tell you, there is one word that I have researched and I have not been able to find any... This is a completely, as far as I can tell, idiosyncratic usage, and that is mellows as a noun. I can't find it anywhere beyond Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. That's his invention, as far as I can tell. Nectarian means very sweet, like nectar. But nectarine, that needs to be edited. Nectarine is an adjective. Nectarine is... a noun. It's a fruit. But it's not an adjective. So that's just like part and parcel. Part and parcel means it's of the same nature, of the same quality as something. It doesn't mean a piece of or something like that. I have found no place other than Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and his disciples where the word mellow is used as a noun. It's an adjective and it's a verb. But I've found, and I've researched it, I haven't counted the hours, but many hours trying to find, because Because as somebody who wants to, who you know, has a desire to share Krishna consciousness with other people, I'd like to be able to explain it. And I can't beyond the fact that this is a word that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used as a sort of a substitute for rasa and sometimes for rati. Oh, yeah. Right. It may. Right. You're old enough to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially nowadays, there is nobody's mellow, except, unless you go to a rainbow festival or something.
Wow. Yeah.
It's probably a more British usage, and maybe older. Prabhupada's British was Victorian, and I mean he learned English 100 years ago, or thereabouts, and it was quite different. I mean people read Shakespeare's English, which is only 400 years old. It's only 400 years old. And they act like it's a foreign language because of the few differences between his usage then and our usage now. So it's a matter of passing interest to me. And if it's of interest to nobody else, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm good with that. Pushkar? I brought this up now because the word was used in the purport I read.
But then, of course, everything in every movement or every perspective is a language. So if I were out of Libyan walking up to you and you started throwing these words at me, if I said, oh, well, he must be Christian consciousness, is he using mellow, this, that? Whereas I went to the doctor, and I thought, look at me and said, you look like this.
Nobody outside of Krishna consciousness is going to be able to identify where the heck that came from and what it means. This whole business is fairly foreign to them. I mean, Rupa Goswami borrowed from Bharat Muni's, and Srila Prabhupada refers to Bharat Muni in that purport. He borrows from Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra, his whole analysis of the science of how to present drama. And he uses it to explain this ocean of the nectar of devotion. That's a kind of an innovative thing in itself. As I said, you keep asking the question, why pick on that word? Because it was there. Just like the mountain. Ramanya Prabhu? I have a challenge for you then. I don't dispute that Srila Prabhupada's perfect, English is perfect, or that anything, or that everything about Srila Prabhupada is perfect. But I have a challenge for you. Sit down sometime, get a copy of the Delhi edition of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and read it aloud. Have you read it aloud? Without ever stumbling? I say it in front of the deities and I'll believe you. Exactly. Exactly. And when fertile hearts are encountered, the seeds sprout. And guess what? The edited versions, they're still making devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ah, okay. Here's the... Exactly. You won't be able to understand them. However, if you look at the last verse in that chapter, what's it, chapter 35 of Srimad Bhagavatam? You look at the last verse, what does Shukadev say? Maharaj Prickett asked him, what's going on here? He's supposed to be like the exemplar of religiosity. And he's dallying in the middle of the night with unmarried girls and other people's wives? What is that about? And Shukadev goes on to explain over a couple of verses,